So for the people who are going to listen to this who don't know the history of the broken social scene, do you want to talk about like how it started and how it's evolved up to now? Like your origin story?
The origin story is kind of like Kevin's pals and my pals kind of combining, I suppose. Mm-hmm. I mean, I knew Kevin from around town, and I just thought he was kind of a curious guy. And I listened to one night, my friend played me some of his stuff called Casey Accidental.
Mm-hmm.
So I absentmindedly said, oh, maybe I'll make this kid a star. And that's kind of how it started. And then I just started calling him up and said, hey, we should make some music. I heard your Casey Accidental stuff. I think, you know, I think it'd be a good fit. And he was just moving into a new place with his then wife. And we made a Feel Good Lost in the basement and started rehearsing different versions of the band mm-hmm. in the basement. You know, we were both into a very fluid concept of what a band lineup should be.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even like at the same time while that was going on, I had another group, like similar in concept, but not similar in tightness,
sure.
I suppose, as far as like family orientation goes.
Mm-hmm.
Like the broken social scene friendships were a lot deeper. So I think that was why the band lasted and the other one didn't last as long.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah, and then, you know, all those rehearsals turned into You Forgot It in People, and mm-hmm. You Forgot It in People is basically the album that set our career in a forward trajectory. And like any band, you release records, you have all sorts of tumult mm-hmm. and members dip in and out over the years, and here we are in 2019, still rocking, still tired, because I just always get tired after coming home from a tour, like anyone would, I guess, after multiple flights and time zones and waking up at 4 o'clock in the morning and getting to your next hotel room and then wandering the hotel room hallways, wondering why there's not a room 1134, but that's because there is no room 1134. That was the hotel 12 hours prior. But I've never been through that before, actually. Like, just wandering the hotels, like, I swear to God there was an ice machine here. And, you go downstairs, like, is there a different elevator to get to 1134? Sir, you're in room 1556.
Incredible.
Like, okay, good. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm sure it all just blends together at some point.
Yeah, I mean, it's good to do, at least have unique experiences on tour so you can remember and decipher the evenings from one to another.
Sure.
But, you know, sometimes they blend.
Do you have like a favorite city or a favorite experience that you've had on this tour?
On this last run,
mm-hmm.
I mean, we played a zoo in Portland.
Really?
The Portland Zoo, yeah.
That's
so
cool.
Met some giraffes. That was cool. And we tried to keep the set of music very zoo-friendly, keep the decibel limit within reason for elephants.
Right.
And, you know, a few days later, we were playing a yoga festival in Whistler, British Columbia.
Wow.
It was also nice because people, yeah, it's like you're on the West Coast and it's a Whistler-themed festival, and, yeah, people can dance.
Yeah, for sure.
And most shows you go to, people just stand and stare at you.
Yeah.
You know, which is fine, too. I mean, I'm happy for anyone who wants to buy a ticket and watch the show. But there is, like, it's music. You should move to it a little bit.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
A lot of your songs tend to have, like, one motif that you sort of write around, whether it be, like, lyrically or music or, like, instrumentally. Do you have, like, one specific message, or is there, like, a unified message that you're trying to get across in each song or in each album?
I mean, that's maybe more of a Kevin question.
Sure.
but for me, I think whatever lyrics are getting spat out are just lyrics that are supposed to be reflecting what you're going through.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're all supposed to be personal experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And we're all, you know, we're all kind of traveling in this one vessel together. So it's this combined psyche, I suppose.
Sure.
And when you're in the midst of writing songs, I mean, it all just, you know, you can talk lots of the concepts of albums and stuff, but, you know, ultimately, it should just be an honest reflection of what you're going through.
Totally. Do you think it's possible to be, like, too honest with songwriting?
Possibly too earnest.
Sure.
Where you're just, you know, some songs are just ridiculous, like, making your breakfast, and I love you, because I think about you, and here's the morning paper, or whatever, you know. Yeah, I don't think, no, you definitely cannot be too honest. I mean, people want, that's what, you know, most people crave, is like some honesty in the lyric writing, and something that, if it's not relatable, at least it's a story you're telling that, you know, makes sense, or, you know, connects with people on an emotional level. I mean, that's the whole gist of it.
Right. What is the songwriting process for your band? Like, what's the collaborative process like?
I don't know. It depends. You'd have to ask me a song. I mean, it all varies song to song.
Varies song to song. So for, like...
Yeah.
Let's find one. The one that I was just listening to was Windsurfing Nation.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. So tell me about that one.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's some rapping in that one.
I think so.
I think, yeah, that's a pal of ours up here, an artist named Chaos. He raps on that one. I think Feist has got some vocals on it. I think probably started... I don't know whether that one started as a basement jam or whether we wrote that one in the studio.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Leslie Feist, she came in and laid some vocals on it afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
But originally it was, you know, it was like a written in the studio kind of. So that was supposed to be the name of that album. And at the last minute we chickened out for some reason. I don't know why. I probably overthought it. But, yeah, that was supposed to be the title track for that album until we changed it to a self-titled. Kevin drove that song for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Originally. This is his main vocal. But then everyone spits stuff on top of it. I'd have to listen to that one because we've often thought about playing it live, and then I don't know, it seems to be an elusive track that we just never played live.
How do you guys decide what you play live?
You know, certain songs, it's like getting bills passed through the house.
Mm-hmm.
You know, certain songs people will get on board with, and one, there are certain tunes in your career that have been like your big hits, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Whether it's Anthem for a 17-year-old girl, or Cause Equals Time, or Evie Dreams of Pavement,
mm-hmm.
or Sweetest Kill, or, you know, later on, like Hug of Thunder has been kind of a big tune, or Protest Song were big tunes off the last record. So, yeah, you know, you try to play a bunch of your bigger tunes, and then you try to play some deeper cuts, and you try to switch it up so you keep everyone in the band like happy and yeah.
We're on like what, the 20th anniversary year of the band?
Getting there. Yeah, it's
getting
August
there.
Now, so yeah, I suppose 20 years ago, Kevin made me a couple of mixed tapes, actual tapes. I went on tour with my band, By Divine Right, And Leslie Feist was in that band as well. And yeah, I listened to these cassettes, and he had one Casey Accidental song in there that Emily Haynes sang, and Leslie was really curious. Yeah, so yeah, that's 20 year anniversary. I got back from that tour and was kind of winding things down with that group By Divine Right. Yeah.
How has the, like, not only how has the music industry changed, but how have you changed your ways of, like, navigating through the music industry?
Well, I mean, you just try to, it doesn't really get easier. There, I sent you a shot. I mean, you know, you try to just make, it's pretty simple. You try to make the best music possible. You try to pick the best gigs that are being offered to you. Try to make smart decisions that make economic sense. Yeah, try to, you know, all the things, you know, whether it's the merchandise you're choosing or who's designing that or who's designing your posters or what kind, you know, the music industry, you know, it'll be what it'll be. If you have, like, a song that's just hot fire, then that will dictate what's happening for you. And if you're a band who's been a band for 20 years and, you know, to a certain degree, things will dictate. You know, everything will run as it should if you're a band. Like, for us, this recent run out, we wanted to just play some key cities and do, like, sort of a multiple night run so we could sort of expand on the set list and play different sets every night. So in New York, you know, you do 3 nights, or Los Angeles, you do 3 nights, and same in Toronto or Montreal or Seattle. And then, yeah, you know, whatever comes your way and whatever makes sense and whatever's not going to exhaust your band or whatever's not going to be a dumb idea,
yeah,
you know, for your band to be involved with, all those kinds of things.
What made you want to start your own record label?
Me personally? Yeah. It was just, you know, it seemed like a good fit for my solo stuff, since it was kind of, it was a pretty low-key affair, all things considered.
Sure.
I didn't have, I didn't have any real big dreams of anything other than just wanting to get some ideas out. I don't know, they could have been fleshed out more, but, you know, you can keep working on music for as long as you want.
Yeah.
You know, fine tuning it. It really depends what your goals are and whether you're trying to, you know, what your objectives are.
Sure.
Ultimately, I've always wanted to be in, you know, I want to make a living as a musician.
Yeah.
So whether that's, you know, being in a band and touring or making music for TV or film or commercials even, or DJing. Well, I always just try to, you know, you try to do the best that's available to you that your brain can come up with.
Yeah.
And if you think you're falling short, then bring in someone else or try to be smart enough to, you know, realize your shortcomings.
Totally. I want to talk about Lover's Spit for a few minutes. So the way that I heard about Lover's Spit was through the Lord song, where she says "Lover's Spit left on repeat," and my sister...
Oh, that's the first time you heard about that song?
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
My sister was like,
"Yeah, that was good. That was a great lyric drop,
wasn't it?" How does it feel to know that, like, you're influencing so many different artists across, like, the spectrum of music?
Yeah, it's great. You know, Maggie Rogers was another one who's, you know, she came up and joined Southwest. I think it's exciting just to see, you know, artists who are a lot younger than me, but really just given a little nod, it's sort of like, yeah, we did something that was half decent, you know, that some people took notice of. Perhaps drew a little bit of inspiration and ran with it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, if I could write a tune as big as Royals or one of Maggie's songs, you know, but they're smart gals and very talented. So what can you do?
Yeah.
But sit back and enjoy their ascent and see how they play it out. And you can look and like, say, oh, man, these are smart women, you know. I wish I had done that, but yeah, it's cool. I love it, you know. Anyone who cites anything we've done as an influence means that yeah, maybe I've done something useful with my life.
If you could lyric drop any song, which song would it be from anyone who you listen to ever?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe like, I'd go a deep cut and like lyric drop Bert Jantz or something like that. British folk guy. Just because I just bought one of his records recently. And they're, yeah, guy's a master on guitar.
In an interview with the Strombo show, you kind of shouted out someone in the audience who had gotten you guys your first show. And that got me wondering, like, what the story is behind that first show and what that feeling was like compared to playing shows now.
I wonder who I shouted out. I wonder if that was Yvonne.
I think it was.
Yvonne. Yeah. I mean, God, she was around when my first band was trying to get shows. Well, I was definitely the guy who was hustling for shows.
Mm-hmm.
But so was Kevin too. But I mean, I'm talking my first band. But I mean, you know, now it's different because he played a whole bunch of shows, and you know, now I can be sitting in my hotel bathroom tub at 8:35, knowing I have to go on at 9 o'clock, and realizing everything is set up for me, and I can just walk into the venue and get on stage, have a look at the set list prior to the show, and get out there and do it. So there are certain comfort levels.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's kind of the same thing. It's like, touring-wise, like, get in the van. You're driving from Portland to Seattle, or get on the plane. It's 4 a.m. You got to get up. You got to go through customs. You're flying at 6:20.
Mm-hmm.
Flying to Minneapolis. Okay, now get in the van. Now you're driving to the hotel. Now sleep for 45 minutes. Okay, get up. Now you're going to soundcheck. Okay, sorry, the dressing room's freezing. Okay, now go back to your hotel room. Okay, now come back to the show. I mean, yeah, it's all very much like day-to-day life.
Sure.
Our, you know, one day you're in Singapore, the next day you're in Caldwell, Idaho, playing at, you know, in some kid's living room. you know, we've been lucky, you know, or one day you're watching Erykah Badu side stage, waiting for her to get off so you can get on stage at Coachella.
Right.
Yeah. You know, all the fun stuff and all the wild and woolly stuff along the way. And yeah, it's a real good chance to get to see the world and get to see different walks of life.
Totally. Yeah. Do you guys like playing festivals compared to playing like regular shows, or do they kind of level up the same?
Yeah, you know, one, you're playing someone else's party, and one, you're kind of throwing your own party. So,
right.
Yeah, it can both be fun. You know, if there's something very, if you're playing a festival, it's like, yeah, maybe you got some friends at the festival, other bands, so you get a chance to hang out, see some people you haven't seen for a while. Like, yeah, what was it last year in London? Who played? Like, War Paint were playing, The National were playing, War on Drugs, and you know, we know all those crews, so you have one of those days. It's like, hey, work together. Like, we've all shared crew over the years as well, so you get to know, you have this extended family kind of thing.
Totally.
Going to some kind of family reunion. And then you get to meet Chrissy Hynde from The Pretenders, you know, so it caps off the day nicely. Or I can fan out unabashedly.
If you guys could make, like, a lineup of, if you had your own, like, Broken Social Scene Festival, and you could create, like, a one-day lineup, who would be your bands that you'd want to play?
Well, these days, I like Parquet Court.
Nice.
I like that, what is it, Ivan Avenue? Do you know him?
I do not.
Oh, yeah. He's a tough guy. Make sure, is that right? Yeah. Norwegian rapper.
Huh.
He worked with some of the folks on Stone's Throw Records.
Okay.
But anyway, yeah, this album called Every Eye. It's a really great record, yeah. I'll send you that, too. Isn't that copying? Anyway. Who else? There's a woman in Toronto I really like named Jennifer Castle.
Okay.
As well as a woman in Toronto named Charlotte Cornfield.
What kind of music do they make?
Why don't you write them down? And Jennifer Castle made a record a couple years ago, Pink City.
Okay.
That's a fucking killer record. I think it came out on Jag Jaguar. That's a beautiful record.
What was the other one?
Charlotte Cornfield. What's that?
Charlotte who?
Cornfield. She's a Toronto gal. Kind of, you know, really honest songwriting. Great lyrics. Like, really great lyrics. Ones that you'll chuckle and then ones that'll make you cry.
Awesome.
So, yeah, for a couple of Canadian acts there. I should get some, who was that group we saw in Austin, Texas? Shit, I can't remember them. But maybe, you know what, I kind of like White Denim. Like, they'd be a good group to have. You know, maybe for old school, you could try and get Cool Keith. Or, Cool Keith might be fun. I don't know how much he plays live, to be honest. But I'd take him over T-Pain, you know?
Yeah.
Not T-Pain, sorry. Who's the guy from Clips? Pusha T.
I haven't heard that name in years.
Pusha T?
Yeah.
Really?
Really.
He tours.
Does he really?
Yeah, yeah. There was the last show we did in Toronto, I guess because he was throwing some shade Drake's way.
Oh, God.
So apparently Drake's crew, like, you know, got to the front. Yeah, it was like big assault at the show, and they came up to the front of the stage and like sprayed him with beer and shit, and then it kind of got out of hand.
Oh my God.
But yeah, because Pusha T was in Clips. I was a big Clips fan. And I know Andrew was too. I know Andrew would probably want Omar Suleiman. And then maybe, you know, see if Boards of Canada would do a show. So there you go. There's a little list for you.
It's a lot of artists that I need to do some research on.
Yeah. Yeah. That Jennifer Castle record, it's killer.
Yeah, I'll listen to it on the drive.
Charlotte has a song called Silver Civic.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really beautiful tune. And she also has a song called Volcano, where there's a lyric where she says, "You think you're such a Rasta, but you would know Mount Zion from Mount Shasta." I thought that was a pretty funny line. And it's good when it's sung, you know, then you laugh.
Yeah.
There's a little lineup for you.
Cool.
Oh, and who's that guy on that Merge record? William Tyler. Maybe put him on there.
William Tyler.
Yeah. like, you know, that guy I mentioned, Bert Jantz.
Mm-hmm.
He probably, oh yeah, Bert Jantz is amazing.
So your most recent record, Let's Try the After, Volume 2, I was listening to it on the drive up, and I noticed that, at least compared to some of your earlier stuff, you went a little bit more, not electronic, but I can't think of another word other than electronic.
Mm-hmm.
What pushed you guys into that direction?
I think with the latest batch of tunes, you know, some were left over from the Hug of Thunder sessions.
Mm-hmm.
And others were, I don't know, that's just kind of the way it came out. You know, that's the path we were leading. We were working with a guy named Niall Spencer.
Mm-hmm.
And he probably had, you know, a degree of direction in where we were going. And, yeah, you know, that was the batch of tunes we went with.
How do you guys decide, like, what goes on the album and what doesn't?
Oh, you know, usually massive arguments, and then we whittle it down to something.
Do you try to
Hug of Thunder was the only one where there was a couple songs where we are getting in a bit of heated discussions over certain songs. But for the EPs, I think we all just kind of, like, yeah, we didn't think about it too much, you know.
Sure.
But hear these songs, we think they're good songs. And we've sat on so much material in the past, we just didn't want to sit on any material. Just
yeah.
Like, here, fuck it. Here's these songs. We made them. We like them. We play them live. People react to them. And we stand behind them. So, but yeah, it's often, you know, a democratic process that can get a bit heated if, you know, certain people don't like certain things, but that's the nature of this band, you know. We're all on the same page, yet we're all on different chapters sometimes.
Right. Do you try to make each album like a collective of, like, storytelling, or is it just, I like this song, and I like this song, and I like this song?
Well, you try to make something that's cohesive.
Sure, yeah.
You're making an album, and you're the type of person that wants to put on an album from beginning to end and hear everything that an artist wants to say or sing or present to you,
mm-hmm.
then, yeah, it's got to be, you know, from song to song, it's got to make sense, or it's got to flow a certain way.
Sure.
So, yeah, that's, yeah.
Do you remember each album as, like, a specific part of your life?
Yeah, of course.
Do you have stories from, or, like, a favorite story from any of those, like, time periods?
What? Do I have one favorite story?
Just one.
20 years?
I'm really putting you on the spot with that.
You know, when we made Forgiveness Rock record, we spent a lot of time in Chicago, and I lived in a house at Damon and Berteau.
Mm-hmm.
And we rented some bikes, although I bought a bike because it was just cheaper than paying for a cab every day when you work it all out. So I had this kind of old cruiser with like a fake gas tank on the bicycle, like one of those old one speeds.
Mm-hmm.
And Chicago's so flat that it was easy to ride around. So I have you know, fond memories of just waking up, riding to the studio, making the band Oatmeal, and everyone kind of either rode bikes or cabbed it there. And I'd kill some time at, you know, buying records at Reckless Records or Dusty Groove. And maybe it's not my favorite album, but and it wasn't maybe the easiest record to put together.
Mm-hmm.
None of the records are easy to put together, except for Feel Good Lost and You Forgotten People. Those were relatively easy to put together.
Sure.
everything else has not been. Yeah, I liked living in Chicago, I have to say. I liked, dreaming about what it would be like to live there. Or like, wow, look at these nice houses. I like it so much better than Toronto. And you kind of have a love affair with the city.
Yeah.
And I guess that's the only city I've really been, felt like, oh, I could move here. What would I do in Chicago? Yeah. So, yeah, there you go.
I've noticed with a lot of bands, especially in this like political climate, like a lot of their songs are taking a political turn. Like just off the top of my head, like the 1975, or like Lana Del Rey just posted something on Instagram today. She wrote a song about mass shootings. Do you see any of your songs going in that direction, or are you sticking to your own lives?
I mean, you know, go deep, listen to some of the lyrics,
mm-hmm.
and you'll hear some political messages.
Sure.
I mean, if we were a different kind of band, we'd have a different kind of audience.
Right.
But I think we're attracting, you know, we're on the good side. We're on the fight. We're on the side that fights for equality. We're on the side that fights for human decency.
Good.
On the side that fights for kindness. So that's political, right? Everything
yeah.
you do, every sort of move you make, whether it's, whether I'm drinking my single origin coffee or not,
mm-hmm.
or, where are you buying your groceries from? Where is that farm from? You know, all this stuff, all of it's all, when you run it up the chain, it all has to do with politics on any level.
Sure. I feel like that's what makes your music so welcoming. Like, you guys, a lot of your songs really just start off heavy and they end heavy. And it feels like a big, like, circle of, like, warmth. Like, I get what you're saying. Like, all of your songs, like, whether or not I'm listening deeply enough to the lyrics or not, but there's never a moment where I'm like, I don't like this. Like, every song is just, like, very welcoming. And I think that is rare sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, we're trying to do something unique.
Yeah.
So, we'll just keep on. I mean, you got a lot of personalities in this band and a lot of unique individuals.
Mm-hmm.
That's for sure. And a lot of people who want to do a lot of different things and a lot of people who aren't interested in many mainstream things.
Mm-hmm.
So, but we all like good music.
Right.
So, yeah. And I guess maybe the whole reason we titled Hug of Thunder, or, well, it was Leslie's lyric that we chose to be an album title.
Mm-hmm.
But that's kind of the purpose of the music, you know? It's like a hug of thunder. It's supposed to be powerful, and it's supposed to make you feel welcome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As someone who's been in the industry for so long, what would your advice be to people who are trying to start out?
Well, I would say try and make it, I don't know, it really depends on what your objective is. If you think, like, I don't want to say, oh, make sure you have a good backup plan, because that's something like someone's parent would say, but I've stumbled into backup plans.
Right.
I think just try and be a decent person and try and write honestly and do your homework, you know, like listen to, like, if you love music and you just wake up and like, I gotta, you know, I'm gonna do this. If this is my life's blood, then, you know, figure out what kind of artists are doing what you wanna do and how did they get to where they're getting, and what were the career choices they made, and why are they doing better than you're doing? I can even remember seeing like an old interview that I did in the 90s where I was talking about the Flaming Lips and saying, well, I know my dad's not at the Flaming Lips level, mm-hmm. but I want to get there. So I think, yeah, but I was, you just got to work hard.
Yeah.
You got to work really fucking hard. And if you work really hard and you're smart enough and your songs are good enough and you got the right crew, then you might just be able to carve out a little path for yourself in the music business of what, you know, whatever you're doing. I mean, maybe you want to be a producer. You know, same thing. You got to spend like a lot of hours. I give different advice to anyone who wants to be a producer versus being in a band. I mean, you know, you're saying how to get into the music business. I mean, there are a lot of jobs out there.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as, you know, the one I'm most known for is being in a band and making it work for, you know, I've been playing in bands for, what is it now? I've been playing in bands since 1991. You know? I've had record deals with other bands. Had lots of unsuccessful trips. And this has been the most successful, probably because we tried to maintain the friendship aspect first and try to not chase the dream.
Right.
I think when you start chasing the dream, if you don't have a really incredible team behind you that's helping knock down doors for you, then you could be in trouble.
Right.
I took a very modest path. And it's led to, you know, a good career. It's still a modest career. I mean, yeah, we can sell close to 3,000 tickets in San Francisco, mm-hmm. which is great. And I still think that's modest. We're not playing hockey or anything.
Right.
Yeah. But, not so bad.
Well, if you want to, I don't want to take up any more of your time. If you want to.
I'm just having. Have my breakfast, drinking my coffee.
If you want to plug any of your social medias, or I know you guys just released something, so maybe upcoming releases if you have any.
No upcoming releases. We got a couple more shows this year, like one in Marfa, Texas, and one in Mexico City.
Awesome.
And then we're taking our foot off the gas for a little bit and recalibrating the ship. Seeing what's in our future.
Yeah. Well, thank you for being so patient with all of the technical difficulties and for letting me have so much time.
Oh, that's okay. Nice chatting with you.
Yeah, of course. You too. Good luck with the rest of tour. Have fun. Be safe.
Yeah, okay. Thanks, Danielle.
Thanks. Bye-bye.